Mics are live.
All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. This is an informal hearing on case number PU-19-329. It is 1:34 p.m. on Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotchis, joined by Commissioner Julie Fedorchuk and Commissioner Randy Christman. I don't have any opening comments other than welcome. Glad you're here, Commissioner Fedorchuk.
I have no opening comments.
None here either.
Okay. This is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we will close the informal hearing and issue a notice of hearing. The applicant goes first in this type of proceeding, but before we do that, I'll have staff introduce themselves, followed by company representatives.
John Shun, I would be advisory staff on this case.
Victor Shook with advocacy staff.
Brian Johnson, advocacy staff.
Chris Pubaltz with Transmission Project Management, Xcel Energy.
Benjamin Halama with Revenue Requirements at Xcel Energy.
Dave Cedarquist, Regulatory Affairs, Xcel Energy. And we have some folks on the phone as well.
Okay, could the individuals on the phone, could you identify yourself for the record, please?
Good afternoon, Mara Ashman from Xcel Energy.
Rebecca Eiler from Xcel Energy.
Michelle Terwilliger, Xcel Energy.
Matthew Harris, Xcel Energy.
Chris Shaw, Xcel.
Chris Franks with Xcel.
Brian Streen, Xcel Energy.
Martha Hoschmiller, Xcel Energy.
Nate Hertz, Xcel Energy.
And that's everyone.
Thank you.
All right.
What area are those folks from, Dave, just generally?
We have legal representation, folks in the transmission area, and our regulatory group as well.
Right.
So. Perfect. Thank you. All right. It's all yours.
So, commissioners, thank you for scheduling this informal on both dockets. We appreciate that. And I just want to say, commissioners, that the company really appreciates the way that Victor has conducted his review of our petitions here. He's been very open and communicative. We appreciate that. He's asked some good questions, and with the whole PTC wrinkle, he's been really good to work with. So I just wanted you to know that. Ben Chalama's group does a lot of number crunching to derive the revenue requirements that we use in these riders. So he's going to be walking you through the presentations. I did just want to point out Chris Buboltz is also here. He's from our transmission group if there are questions about any specific investments. And then also we have folks on the phone, as you heard. Chris Shaw is on the phone as well. He is a good resource for wind-specific projects, or if there's any questions about what's happening in some of the other jurisdictions, he can probably address some of those too as well. So with that, I'm just going to hand it over to Benj, and he'll get started with our transmission overview.
Does this need to be any place?
They don't have to be close to you. So wherever they're positioned, they should pick you up.
So I'll walk through the slide. By all means, feel free to interrupt me at any point with any questions on any of the specific slides. provided the TCR statute, some of the language here. I'm not going to go through that. Just have that there for reference.
Can I hold on a second? Am I on the right?
Next one. 19328. Yeah, that one.
I think I announced 329 though.
Did you? I didn't.
Is
I don't
that
recall.
You wanted, or
no.
You wanted 328.
I thought so.
Okay, just a correction in case I said PU-19-329. We were 19-328.
All right, so on slide three, just have an overview of some of the specifics. We'll go into some of these in a little bit more detail in the coming slides. But this is the sixth year the TCR rider will be in effect for 2020. We're including five new projects in the revenue requirement calculation for 2020 for a total of $6.9 million. This reflects a 9.85% ROE, and so that was agreed to in the TCJA settlement. And this produces a proposed rate of 0.35 cents and an estimated residential customer impact of $2.63 a month. Both of these two numbers here reflect our updated filing that was made earlier in January and reflect an April 1 implementation date. And I have a slide later on that goes into that in a little more detail so you can see how that changed from our initial petition to now. So slide 4 walks through the history of the 6 years the TCR rider will be in effect. In 2020, the revenue requirement is higher than it was in 2019, a little lower than it was in 2018. this is the highest residential bill impact, but as I stated before, this one is, we have that condensed window where we're implementing the rate. And so instead of applying that rate over the 12 months, it's over 9 months, and so that makes it a little higher. If we were over a full 12-month rate, it would be $2.31 for a residential customer. So then it would be more in line with kind of historical. Just a couple call-outs on this this slide. 2019, you'll notice the revenue requirement is really low there. There was a large true-up in 2019 related to the TCJA impact that we were then flowing back through that 2019 rate. And so that's why 2019 looks really low on this slide.
And what's the cause of the 9 month recovery period?
Just the implementation of the rate. And so on a later slide, I'm going to show, you know, what it would have been if we implemented a rate on January 1 versus March or April 1. And so just those additional months we're still collecting under the rate of 19 cents. Or 0.19 cents for the first 2 or 3 months of 2020. And so that results in having a higher rate in the last 9 months to get to the full revenue requirement for 2020.
And is that on our end from processing? Or is that you're both, you filed later, or what's, why is it?
I think we filed a similar timeline that we had in the past.
I mean, it's hard to say if it's...
I mean, I know we get a bunch of these all at
once.
And so it's hard for... Staff
January 1 isn't always the easiest date to hit.
Yeah.
So we did the 9 month routine last year as well.
Yeah.
Doing that allows us to sort of minimize that true up because now we're still recovering the 2020 revenue requirement in 2020. So as opposed to not doing the catch up right away. So It's an approach that we used last time, Benj will talk about what that looks like on the other slide.
Okay.
And we're continuing to look at ways to try to accelerate our filing to narrow that window. And so I think we did file a week or two earlier this year, and we'll look to try to do as much of that as possible in the future, too, to prevent some of that bottleneck.
Okay. Is there a potential time frame that if we reached a decision by a certain date that you would actually affect these starting in March already and it would be a 10-month spread instead of 9?
It takes about 10 days to put a rate into place. And so if we had a decision within 10 days of March 1, the date that we could get that rate into effect as of March 1. And later on, I do have a showing what that amount would be, so you have that for context.
A little bit of more on the kind of the timing of all this stuff. So pretty much all of the rider updates come in about the same time. They all flood in at the end of the year. It's less so processing time, but more so scheduling informals for all of these things. We ran out of informal sessions. I mean, we were scheduling into February back in December already. So that was kind of the major issue is we just didn't have enough informal sessions to talk about all these things.
Just from my perspective for the future, we can create more informals off of the regular schedule. They don't have to be just in the weeks, and from my perspective. So we can find additional dates to do it in informal.
Sure.
I'm open for that.
Mm-hmm. My question is the impact of the average residential customer. It's based on 750 kilowatt hours.
Yes.
Now we, the three utilities that IOUs that we regulate, you use 750, one uses 894, and one uses 1,000. So is the 750, is that based on actual math? You've done the math and know that this is the true average, or?
If we took all of our residential customers, of which in North Dakota about a fourth of them are heating, electric heating customers, you get an average that's higher than 750. The 750 probably relates more to the average of our non-heating electric customers, which is about 75% of all of our residential. So we're trying to come up with a typical impact that reflects most of our customers and not have it skewed by the heating loads that a fourth of the customers have. So,
yeah, the reason I ask, if we were using 1,000 kilowatt hours, for example, a third again as high, or a third of, you know, what the impact is, added on to the impact, and you're going to come up with an actual number. So I just want to make sure that, because oftentimes I'll explain that when we have the motion, the order, and I'm describing, okay, what's the impact? And it's a question that comes up typically from the press, what's the impact to an average residential customer? And it feels like when I started to think about this that I'm giving a lower number for this, for example, than if obviously, you know, the example was a higher number. And I just want to get a better idea what's realistic, what's...
I think it's fair, but I mean, I think each company is trying to represent their numbers fairly. You know, in my opinion, the customers are different between the three utilities. I mean, I would see more so, you know, Excels are more urban, suburban type of customers that are going to have gas available and likely very little electric heating. MDUs is kind of more middle of the road, where they have a lot of the smaller towns or some smaller towns that don't have gas available, so they have some heating, but not certainly not all. Mm-hmm. And Otter Tail's territory would be primarily small towns do not have gas available, so there's going to be a lot more heating load. And in my opinion, that's why we would see the difference in the average customer. Mm-hmm. So they're certainly different between the three, and we need to keep that in mind. But I don't think it's misrepresented in anything like
that. No, and I wasn't suggesting that it was one way or the other. I was just wondering what the science behind it was, and I just hadn't asked.
And I think in our general rate filings, we will provide, you know, bill impacts for more than one usage average. So we haven't done that with the riders. I suppose we could do that if that would help provide a better picture of the bill impacts.
Thank you for clarifying.
So switching to slide 5, this kind of compares the two different vintages. And so 2019, that is our 2019 approved number that the rate was set on. And then 2020 is what we're requesting here with our updated filing that was made in January. And so, you know, breaking this down into the piece parts, the existing projects resulted in $469,000 of the $1.8 million change between 2019 and 2020. The majority of that relates to an update for Wisconsin depreciation rates. And then the next and the largest impact here is the true-up amount. And so, as I stated earlier, the TCJA impact in 2018 resulted in a large true-up that was that impacted the revenue requirement in 2019 and brought down that revenue requirement substantially. And so we don't have that same type of true-up flowing from 2019 into 2020. And so that true-up changes so that the overall revenue requirement is higher by almost $1 million for that one. That one item.
So we need more tax cuts, is what you're saying?
Well, I'm not going to sign up for more of that. A lot of circling around. So I think it's fine where it is. Let's just leave it and go from there. The next slide just kind of gives a visual breakdown of what the revenue requirement is made up of, what projects drive the revenue requirement. And so the largest slice of the pie here is the CapEx group. And so they make up 45% of the total revenue requirement. And then La Crosse Madison, another 345 kV line, makes up 17%. And then the remaining 345 smaller projects, but still 345 kV line, make up 7%. All the other projects within the rider make up about 30% of the total revenue requirement.
Now, distribution projects aren't on this, right?
No.
Just the... to the substation, to this, the main city gate substation, that's where these lines lead to? Or how far down into the distribution network do these projects go? Or do things in this rider go, I should say?
69 kV is generally the bottom end of our transmission system, so it'd be anything that qualifies per the statute, I think, that's 69 kV
okay.
and above. So that would include substation facilities and line facilities. Oh. I think the statute goes down to 48.5 kV that allows, but we generally don't have any transmission voltage below 69.
So does that include then substations throughout your whole footprint?
Yeah, the NSP territory, yeah. Yeah. So North Dakota, South Dakota, Minnesota, and then obviously with the inclusion of La Crosse Madison, that would include those substations that are in Wisconsin.
Okay.
And again, these are North Dakota allocations
right.
of those projects.
Slide 7 lists the 5 new projects that we're adding to the rider here in 2020, the biggest of which is just shy of $50,000 for the 2020 revenue requirements. Slide 8 goes through the potential implementation or date scenarios that I referenced earlier. And so earlier I shared the April 1 implementation. Since we filed that in our update here in January, we updated that earlier slide to show April 1 implementation. But if we are able to get an approval and a rate prior, 10 days prior to March 1, we would be able to implement that rate, which would be average residential impact. Bill impact of $2.50. Our initial petition had average residential bill impact of $2.31.
Okay.
And so this lays out those three potential scenarios, at least as we saw them. But I mean, we can discuss, you know, any questions you may have around that, and if you want to do something different.
I have some questions related to more probably technical system questions, so maybe this is for Chris.
We can try.
And I'm not an expert in this, but I just am curious what sorts of things might be included in these projects for preparation for DERs and new interconnection standards like the IEEE. Standards that Minnesota has been looking at, and
with these new projects,
yeah,
that you're referring
anything
to?
In this bucket of projects and expenses,
nothing that I'm aware of. I would have to look.
Is that more at the distribution level?
I think
okay,
probably yes.
All right. Okay.
Yep.
So I don't have any other commentary for the TCR rider, but any other questions, definitely address those before we move on to the next one.
One more question on some of these upgrades. Do you know, are they, will these upgrades and these projects that are included here have impacts on the queue in terms of we're seeing a lot of congestion out here in North Dakota or any key congestion areas?
These five projects will not.
Okay.
No.
Do you have some in the works next time around, or do you see envision any upgrades in your system to address some of those issues?
As far as I know, the projects that would be addressing congestion are already included in this rider.
Okay.
So like your Huntley Wilmarth,
yeah.
Your MVP, MEP, portfolio projects,
yeah.
are in there.
The key ones.
They're the key ones for now.
Okay.
I'm not aware of what we would have budgeted or forecasted this time that would be impacting congestion.
Okay. All right.
This time.
This might be presumptuous, but if everything ends up being acceptable otherwise, you'd said about 10 days to implement. We have a meeting on the 19th, which would be 9 days before the end of the month. If a decision was reached by then, would we be talking about the 10-month as opposed to the 9-month spread on this?
I don't know if anybody else on the line would have any, definitely address if you think otherwise, but I think 9 days we would be able to do that in 9 days if we got the order at that point. Does anybody disagree with me?
What about?
No, we agree with you over here. Thank you.
What about 8 days?
Yeah.
I have a bad habit of looking up when I hear the voice
yeah.
out of the ceiling. And
it's true. Solicitor Victor, if commissioners, if you're done with your questions, I have a few things I'd like to discuss.
I think we are for now.
Okay. So first of all, so this is the second update that NSP has, or I guess the second filing in this case. So they initially filed September 27th. I had filed a response to that in November, opposing some transmission upgrades necessary to serve the Google load. And the reason behind that is that we didn't feel it's appropriate to charge North Dakota customers for hooking up a retail customer in Minnesota. So we filed that. The company responded in January with an updated filing. They removed the Google upgrades in a kind of a nice little walking the tightrope kind of a method to not completely agree that they'll never ask for recovery of that, but they took it out of the current filing, which I appreciate. But they did add in some additional revenue requirements. They added about $450,000 to the revenue requirement for some things that kind of what it seemed to be is the short version. They forgot about this in some prior filings. So I'd like to ask them to go into a little bit more detail on a couple of those things. So first of all is the Wisconsin depreciation rate. So my understanding, since NSP Wisconsin is part of the integrated system and we share in the costs of that of the integrated transmission system, NSP Wisconsin is a little bit different animal, whereby they're fully controlled by the PSC in Wisconsin, yet we have to pay those costs. So NSP Wisconsin, as I understand, has approved a change in their depreciation rate, so that kind of follows on to an increase in costs for the rest of the system. Can you speak a little bit more to kind of what the change was? And
Yep, I can definitely do that. And so historically in this rider, you know, the 6 years of this rider, when we first started, we did not have any Wisconsin projects that qualified for this rider. So we didn't have any Wisconsin projects in there. With the rollout of La Crosse Madison and that line going into service, that was the first project where we had a Wisconsin asset that was being charged across through the integrated system to NSP Minnesota, and thus North Dakota would have an allocated share. We were updating the depreciation rates for all the other projects. We neglected to update the rate for Wisconsin to be the rate that Wisconsin Commission had approved. And so in this updated filing, now we have updated it with those approved rates for 2018, 2019, and 2020. So that was the vast majority of the increase in our updated filing.
Sure. And along with that, so understand that, we need to correct have the correct rate for 2020. And certainly when we do the true up for 2019, we should consider the appropriate rate. But part of one of my issues is going back into 2018, which seems in my mind anyway to be a closed period for the true up of this rider.
And so when we, you know, when we file this rider, we true up a number of things for 2018. And so when we filed this rider back in October of 2018, we had 6 months of forecast and 6 months of actual for 2018 expenditures. We still had a forecasted or a budgeted demand allocator and a number of other factors that weren't updated until this filing. And so, you know, we were able to bring those updates into this filing, and the depreciation would be another one of those things that we are able to update to the final actual 2018 amounts.
So the updates to the depreciation amounts and other things, is that only applicable to the later half of 2018 then, or the entire year?
It would be the entire year. The rate was in effect for the entire year.
Right. But in theory, at the last update for the 2019 rate, the actuals would have been in through roughly June or whatever. You know, at some point we said this is actuals. In my opinion, that kind of closes that period.
And it's actuals for expenditures, right? So any of our capital expenditures that take place in that first month. But some of the allocators would be something that would kind of transcend the whole year. And so I see depreciation rates similar to that. But,
sure.
You know, I guess that's...
And I don't disagree. Generally, depreciation rates would apply to an entire year period. But we have to cut it off at some point. I mean, at some point, this is retroactive rate making when we're going 2-3 years down the road, and then we're saying, oh, yeah, well, we forgot we needed a few $100,000 more from back in 2015. So I guess that's my concern with this. I understand we really don't have control over what Wisconsin sets the depreciation rate as, and we do need to true up for the appropriate periods, but at some point we need to put a line in the sand. We can't go back. This is really retroactive rate making. And I did kind of pull up the tariff here and the true up discussion in, oh, that's not the right one. So the true up amount shall be recorded by May 1 of the following calendar year and will be included in the calculation of the TCR rate effective for the next calendar year recovery period. So that's kind of telling me that by May 1, we need to true up the prior year. And that's kind of the close of that true-up period. I mean, I realize this was probably designed with exactly when we were implementing those rates back in 2000, would this have been 13, somewhere in that neighborhood? So the dates may not match up, but I think the idea of what this is, you know, within about 6 months or so of the close of that year, we need to have the final true-up done. And we're certainly beyond that for at least the 2018 first half of 2018 at a minimum, if not the whole year of 2018. So that's kind of my thought. I mean, obviously the commission can make their decision, you know, however they choose, but I guess my opinion would be at a minimum this should be recalculated for only applicable to the latter half of 2018. But my preference would be 2018 is kind of closed as a whole.
Yep. And yeah, I mean, I definitely agree that, you know, the commission can make whatever decision. I would only say that, you know, this would have been our first opportunity to really, you know, report any of those true-ups. You know, May of 2019, and we don't have any scheduled filing to show that true-up.
Sure.
At least as far as I'm aware.
Sure.
And so then this petition filed in October, or was it late September, would have been our first opportunity to update for those. So that would be my only comment.
Sure. Back. When did they update those depreciation rates?
Those rates were approved in late 2017. Okay. And so we should have had them in our
2018.
In our previous filing, and we should have had them in our initial petition. It was the first time we had that project, and we just did not get that updated.
Okay. Do you have a dollar figure associated with this?
Yes. So 2018 impact was...
It's $75,000 for the full year.
There you go. That's what was somewhere in your filing you had specified that.
Yep, in the letter sent on January 10th.
There you go. Yeah, $75,000 would be the 2018 full year.
And you're saying half of that is not appropriate, or all?
I believe at a minimum half. If not, I think a reasonable argument can be made for the entire amount of 2018.
Yeah.
That's my position as advocacy staff on mm-hmm. that item. So if there's any other questions, I have.
So, Victor, mm-hmm. that's 70, so 38 to $75,000.
$32,500.
Oh, 32,5 to 70.
Half of 75.
Five. Okay.
Yep.
37.5. Yeah. 37.5.
It's half of 75.
Oh, sure. Okay.
I concur.
My math calculator in the head wasn't working. Rely on that anymore.
My journalism background led me to trust you. I had guessed 38. I was closer, Victor. and then the Google stuff has already been taken out of the calculations here.
Yes.
All right.
I have a question related to the proposed language that you would like to see, or as you think you said something about walking a fine line on how it's worded. What would be the justification or the argument down the line to say, well, now things are different and some of this should be considered?
I think, you know, the reason we're willing to remove it, I mean, $11,000 is not a significant portion of this one. To kind of address the questions, we felt it was reasonable to remove it at this time. However, you know, this is part of, you know, this investment, not like any other transmission, is part of the integrated system. The benefit of bringing Google on, as we showed in previous dockets, allows costs to be shared across the jurisdictions, there can be, even though you're adding a transmission asset, there can be a net benefit to North Dakota ratepayers because of that large addition to the system, and so just sharing in that full integrated system.
Okay.
So that's all I have on that item. The next one is the Sioux Falls Northern Correction. This one, honestly, I had a hard time kind of following exactly what took place. It kind of sounds like you'd changed accounting records or systems, and this got left behind, and we're bringing it into the fold now.
It was here before as part of our 20. I always get the dockets and the years messed up, but a part of our 2018, so fall of 2018 filing. This project was in the revenue requirements. It was all correctly calculated in that year. When we filed the fall of 2019 petition, they had made adjustments in our accounting records that moved project costs from one accounting string to another accounting string. And in our model, then, it looked like brand new assets going into service.
Okay.
And so then it retroactively removed that depreciation that had been happening, you know, through 2018, in 2019, removed it all in that month, and then started depreciating this new spend.
As if it's a new
asset. It looked like it was new spend, but in fact it wasn't new spend. It was just that accounting entry to move it from one string to another.
Sure.
And so what we corrected was we just showed it as, hey, this is, nothing has changed with this asset. We just have spend moving between two places, and so kind of reverting it back to how it looked in the 2018 filing.
So it was like, just to try to simplify it a little bit, I don't know the periods of the depreciation for it, but let's just say it was going to be 30 years. We'd already depreciated, say, 5 years of that. And when it got moved over, the depreciation got knocked off, and we essentially started depreciating what was left of the 25 years, but reset the clock to do it over 30 years.
Correct.
So it would have reduced the depreciation rate. Because it would have assumed this smaller amount over the same period of time.
And that's why we had that negative number in that one month when we looked across the 2019 year.
That makes more sense.
It was hard to try to put it into words in a paragraph that made sense.
Yeah.
I mean, essentially, it was just that simple. Moving dollars that should have had no impact on the revenue requirement, because it had no impact on the actual cost of that asset.
Sure. Okay. And that one didn't go back into 2018. That one stopped in 2019. So.
Yep, it was April of 2019, I believe, is that one month where it moved.
Yeah. I don't have any issues with that item. I just wanted to better understand exactly what happened. That makes much more sense. And then, the only other change from the original was that Google removal. And I've already kind of stated my thoughts on that one, so I won't reiterate any of that since we don't really have it on here. And I'm sure we'll have that fight somewhere down the road again.
Yep.
So with that, I don't have anything else to share.
All right. Brian, Jack, anything else that you might have?
Not for me.
I guess I wouldn't mind if XL Energy given an explanation how they feel this true-up with the 2018 fits into the tariff as for the transmission cost recovery rider. Now, I heard Victor's point of view, and I also think I heard your point of view as well. It sounded like more of a practicality for cost recovery. But how about as it relates to the direct language of the tariff?
That is not my area of expertise. I don't know, Dave or somebody in the field.
I would just suggest that we go back and revisit that tariff language specifically and see how it does relate to what we're doing. Maybe there is something there that we need to clean up or clear up. I don't recall exactly the May language that Victor was referring to, but
sure.
At that time, maybe we did were very prescriptive. and maybe we're not doing it that way. So,
but I would imagine even if the tariff did change, it would still be a prospective change in the tariff. So that would not ultimately affect the 2018, regardless.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I agree with what Benj was saying before. There are many items that do get trued up for that 2018 year because we're only working with half of a year when it first comes into play. So the following year, there are some things that do get trued up, and this is no different than any of those other items. So I see a place for having that year fully trued up to what the actuals are for the whole year. Yeah, and if there are changes in allocation factors, as Ben mentioned, those should be trued up so that we actually have the actual 2018 numbers flowing through into the RER. So, I wouldn't necessarily agree with Vic on this one that, you know, we need to cut it halfway in the middle of the year. I think there are true ups that are taking place for the whole year.
Sure. Well, I guess one.
Just on that point, wasn't this for charges from 2017, though? Weren't we truing up further back than that?
The first
when you first got the depreciation changes from Wisconsin was 2017?
Approved in 2017.
The first actual project that had assets in Wisconsin went into service in December of 2018. So it would have been that very last
month of
2018. And so I guess on that note, I mean, we'd have to go back and calculate it, but just thinking about that holistically, the depreciation then probably would have all been in the last month of 2018, but we could verify that.
Sure.
That piece.
Well, I guess I wouldn't mind a follow-up filing regarding this and how your viewpoint on this. And to an extent, this is almost a contested issue as it is. It might ultimately require some additional proceeding. But why don't we start with that, and then the commission can decide from that point to what is necessary from that point. And I guess I would like to leave the door open or the opportunity at the in this case, number 2, also allow for a follow-up from advocacy staff on the issue as well.
Okay, Jack, anything else?
Nothing. Thank you.
Victor?
Nope, I'm good. If the company can file something on that, if we have any response to that in any way, we can respond quickly. So
okay.
We won't.
We'll get something as quickly as we can.
Okay, perfect. Commissioner Christman, any other questions?
Nothing else.
Nothing else for me either.
And anything else you want to add? Okay. Okay, then the handout as well as the audio recording of this proceeding is now considered evidence. Are there any objections to this evidence becoming a part of the official record upon which a decision will be made?
No objections from advocacy staff.
None here.
Is there anything else to add anyone would like? One last chance at it? Okay. Then the evidence as presented will now become a part of the official record upon which a decision will be made.
I guess just one additional thing, that follow filing as well will be added into the record as well, Mr. Chairman.
Duly noted. Thank you. Okay. All right. This informal hearing is now closed. Thank you.